Good morning, guys. Welcome to another episode of Tuesday Morning Coffee. I'm your host, Tyler Babin, and really, really excited for today's episode. I'm sitting down with my friend, Stephen Borelli, who is the founder and CEO of Cuts Clothing. Stephen hit me up probably like a year and a half ago and sent me some t-shirts back before I was ever really doing anything major, like had no followers on the internet. Cuts was still pretty early in their process, and really being able to watch this company sort of redefine, I think, in a lot of ways, you know, what a t-shirt brand can actually be has been amazing to watch. I've become very close with the whole team over at Cuts Clothing. They're just up to some amazing things. I'm working on a number of different projects with them. And while they were in New York last week, I was able to get Stephen on the podcast. We talked about the background of Cuts, how to get a company off the ground. And not only that, but getting a company off the ground in a very saturated market, the kind of trials and tribulations that come along with that. Stephen and I really just got into like an amazing flow on this conversation. We were just talking all things creativity and business, and I think there's a ton of knowledge that is packed into this 45 minutes. So that's enough of me. I'm gonna get out of the way and let this conversation take over. I hope you guys enjoy it and hope you have a great rest of the week. This is Tuesday Morning Coffee with Stephen Borelli. Stephen Borelli, founder and CEO of Cuts Clothing. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. It's fun to be out here in New York.
Absolutely. So I feel like we have to give some context what we're doing today. Not only are we like recording the podcast and we've become friendly, but you're here shooting like the fall campaign for Cuts.
Yep.
And then I'm working on a few projects together, but yep. Specifically this is like a little side project following kind of a behind the scenes day in the life of Cuts working on this campaign.
Yeah.
Amazing. So for starters, give me the background. What is Cuts? How did it get started? The whole nine yards.
So I'll quickly just kind of go where we start. I was, and it kind of ties into my personal story a little bit too. I was working at an advertising agency right out of college, and it was called Lambesis Agency, very old school, like creative agency where they did like big campaigns for Dasani Water, Tacori Jewelry, some other ones. And we, you know, I noticed a lot of guys in the office were wearing plain, whether it was a Lululemon shirt or a just a plain shirt to work with nice jeans, but none of the shirts were really geared towards that work-life balance. It was either a like Lululemon activewear short shirt or maybe a little too formal. There wasn't this middle ground of comfortable lifestyle clothing that was specifically like minimalist design. Mm-hmm. And then at that same time, I was, you know, it was 2016, and I saw a lot of direct-to-consumer brands out there, and I really wanted to do something in e-com. So once I decided, and I kind of came up with the name Cuts, I moved home. I was 25. I moved home to my parents' basement, and I started working for my dad to save money. And I moved home, and that's when I started working on Cuts.
Yeah. So, well, first, why Cuts? I don't know if I know the story.
I was shopping in Lululemon, and it was when I was like, you know, I wanted to create this shirt brand, and one of the reasons why I wanted to create a shirt brand, I wanted to use a product that someone could use over and over. Yeah. And at the time I was selling produce, apples, from Washington State to New York. Mm-hmm. And what makes that business so great is people that buy last week often buy 2 weeks, they're just monthly users. And I wanted to create a product that had some type of recurring revenue and it had a high lifetime value. And so I was in Lululemon, and I was like, you know, I think there's a real opportunity here. There's, you know, not a source guys can come back to over and over for just a plain elevated shirt. And I was in Lulu, and I saw these like scallop tees and these split hems. I was like, I wish Lulu had like a cut like this. And then I look at my buddy, Chris Luna, and I'm like, Cuts? And he was like, Cuts. And I'm like, do you think that's the name, right? And I looked online, I'm like, for sure Cuts is like got a trademark or something. Yeah. And it didn't. And I was like, let's go.
Locked it in that day.
Yep.
Amazing.
It was fun.
So was this sort of your first like entrepreneurial venture?
My dad's an entrepreneur, and he started the Apple business. Okay. Kind of lived the American dream, grew up in the Bronx, moved out to Washington, and created his, like, a small business. Yeah. So he kind of, you know, taught me a lot about entrepreneurship. But in terms of my first venture was in e-com, was actually I sold barbecue gloves. Because someone told me, like, oh, you know, I bought this online course by this bullshit guy.
Yeah.
And he was like, you need a product here. And I made sure all the math worked. And then I realized, even though I bought the gloves for like 5 cents each, the CPA cost, the cost per to acquire one customer, was double the price of what the gloves were gonna sell for. And yeah. I didn't sell a single one. I got them on Amazon, did the whole FBA, got the whole shebang.
Yeah.
I think my mom and dad and like some friends and family bought a few, but we ended up sending them to some store in New York because the Amazon fee was charging us more. Yeah. But so that was like my first real one. Okay. And then Cuts kind of came after that.
Gotcha. Talk to me about more of like the come up. Like, how were you as a kid? Like, I feel like Cuts and the way you guys are approaching a lot of things is inherently very creative. Mm-hmm. And you seem like a creative just in like the time I've spent with you. Was that always something on your mind that you wanted to like really take out your own sort of path?
Yeah, I always wanted to like, you know, create my own something. It was in me. I think I wanted to be like an athlete, and then I kind of realized like sophomore year of high school, I wasn't tall enough, or I just wasn't strong enough.
For sure.
And I remember going to, from like junior year of high school to junior year of college, going to coffee shops and being like, all right, let's take this time to think of something I could do. And I think what's so important for like, you know, young kids or people, not necessarily young kids, that want to start something is allowing that vulnerability of just thinking. And it's okay if you don't think of an idea, but if it's always on your mind, that's when an idea eventually is going to come to you, because you're going to start looking at things differently. You're going to look at, oh, how's that chair made? Maybe like I could sell that chair. Or, you know, you look at this situation, oh, that could be fun to make money that way.
Yeah.
And I'm really, when I look back, that time was so important because I was always like almost too thirsty, like, oh, I wonder how this could work. And then when my friends started Movement Watches, that gave me an idea, okay, maybe it's e-commerce. And then I kind of took it from there.
Got it. That's really dope. And it's funny, like, talk to me about what the first year was like. You know, like in the car over here, we were talking about like the sort of like gritty struggle. Mm-hmm. And it's funny now, like this lifestyle in which you're in New York, like we have like, you know, there's a big team working on this campaign, like the ball's really rolling. But it's kind of like only recently is things like starting to like really roll. What's it like taking a company from zero to one?
It was, I feel like that's when like all your money's made, zero to like 1 million. Like, because one, to get there, you have to prove like, you know, clients or people will like your product. Mm-hmm. But when we first started, I was living in my parents' basement, and I would fly back and forth to LA, and I would stay at my buddy Ethan's couch, and I remember I got 50 shirts made, and that's all I had. And I had to, like, for a whole year, I was like traveling from Washington to LA with like, I was like holding shirts like in boxes. And I remember one time, like one of like the grind stories was I had a photo shoot with Brennan, who you met today. And I had like these big boxes. I'm wheeling them through the train station downtown to get the shirts to San Diego, because we had friends there that could be models, because we couldn't afford models. And I remember like all the shirts fell all over the train station because I was late to the train. And like, you know, they were all in, like, you know, they had to stay nice. They were like, and they just fell and they got dirty. And I'm thinking, do I really want to do this? And I was trying to vlog it at the same time. So I'm the guy vlogging, shirts are on the ground in the shitty, shitty like Union Station in LA. And it was just like, I remember sitting there like, is this really what I want to do right now?
Yeah.
But, you know, those were lessons that really helped us. I mean, every single PO that we launched had to work, because like if one PO didn't work, we would have been out of money, because we had, you know, we're still to this, have taken no venture money and big money. So it's been, you know, sell one shirt, you know, earn, you know, X, you know, X amount of profit to pay for the next PO.
Yeah. You had mentioned like flying from the parents' basement to LA to work on this. And I think, how old were you whenever you
I was 24, 25 when I moved home.
Okay. And that was coming out of working in advertising. So I'm sure to like a lot of people, it was like, wait, you're taking a step backwards.
Oh, yeah.
First off, like, did you just feel like the gut feeling that the idea was there and you were just gonna have to like eat shit for a while? Like, what's it like to, because I think so many people are scared to lose something they built.
Totally.
Even though it's probably the thing you should do.
Yeah.
You know?
I think one of the stories I have is I was, after I worked at the advertising agency, I started working for my dad at a co-working space where I was just on the phone selling fruit, like not making any money really. Mm-hmm. But I knew I needed just to be on my own time so I could figure out, so I would have the time to work on cuts.
Yeah.
But when I was there, this one, the front desk guy at this company, I was like, yeah, I'm kind of working with my dad. I just kind of want to do things to get experience. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, he goes, you shouldn't look at things like that. If you all you want to do is get experience, you're just gonna, you know, you're just gonna get experience. Like there's plenty of kids out there that are 23, 24 that have billion-dollar companies. That's what your expectation of be of when you do something. And it kind of changed my perspective. But in terms of step back, it was so hard because like telling all my friends, I was gonna go home from San Diego to a small town outside of Seattle called Wenatchee, like 60,000 people. And I, you know, getting on my own, I feel like I'm coming into myself. I'm 24, 25, I think I'm the man, you know? Yeah. And then to go from that to like, you know, sleeping at my parents' house. And I love my parents and they've been great support, but it kind of sucked to live on your own and move in there.
Of course.
And I would sit in bed, like vividly, and be like, I'm not gonna be that kid that came home to start a t-shirt company and it's not gonna work. Like this will work. Yeah. This isn't gonna be my story of living at home and just being that kid. Because now it's like cuts, it's sexy, but back then it was, I was the 25-year-old kid that has a college degree that moved home to start just a t-shirt brand. And you know, how many kids, just has a bad connotation to it. So I think that was like, I just started to develop a lot of self-will there.
Was it a hard decision though? Or was it like the second you hit it, you were like, yeah, this is just what I'm gonna go do?
When the name Cuts came out, I was like, okay, I can see it in my head, it's there. And then I started thinking about, all right, what do I want my life to look like when I'm 35? What does that look like? And like, I couldn't come up with an answer of working for someone. Like there was no A, B, C, or D that was gonna get me to where I wanted to be when I'm 35. So I was like, well, I'm 25 now, if it's gonna take me 10 years to start a business and make money, like I really don't have a choice. So kind of what you were saying is, it was very like, I have to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember one day sitting in San Diego and I was laying down in my room and I was like, I just gotta make a change. Like enough debating, like get home and just go.
Yeah, it's funny,
did you have that kind of scenario when you were, was it hard or?
So the funny thing is I had been saying I was gonna like move to New York or LA for like 5 years before I did it, but it wasn't a matter of like debating whether or not I was gonna do it. It was just like financially going from like a super small town to moving to a big city. I just waited until like I was ready. And I think that's one thing is everyone has their own path and I respect that, but I think a lot of people jump a little bit too early.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm gonna go, because I was the same way. I had talked so much shit. I was like, this can't not work. Like, I can't like go to New York for a year and then fail and come home.
Totally.
So there was a lot of like foundational work that had to get put in place, but no, like, the second I got an email that there was an internship waiting for me, it was like, put everything into a backpack, let's go. I just did a video with Jeff Staple, who like, I don't know if you know Jeff, he's like a fashion designer
in the city. I know his Instagram.
Yeah, he has this quote that's like, if you debate for too long, like if you like really spend like a couple of years like thinking about like which is the better option, it's probably best for you that you don't do the risky one. Mm-hmm. Because you should have the mentality that like, it's like jumping into a pool and not knowing whether or not there's water in it. Mm-hmm. Like I was gonna jump either way.
Totally.
Luckily there was water in it, you know what I mean?
Walk me through that first, like, I'm super interested. You got the job, the internship. You know, we've all seen the videos of but like, what was like the prep, like the week before and then the first week? What was that like?
That was the funny thing. So I didn't have a place to live. I literally was visiting a friend in Nashville, got the email like, hey, you have the job, you have 2 weeks to get here. Nothing was put in place. So I just hopped on Facebook because it was all I like.
Yeah.
I was just like, anyone have a room in New York? Luckily, like a friend of a friend of a friend knew of a room. The room was going to cost, I was making at the time, I think $1,500 a month as an intern.
Jeez.
And my room in Brooklyn that I'd gotten was $1,250. It was like really, and luckily like I had saved up, like I had like a good nest egg to work off of, but was making like no money for those first couple
months.
Wow,
so they put you through the gauntlet.
Yeah. And then the first couple months were good. And I don't know if you know this part of the story, but I worked my face off as an intern for the first 2 months.
I don't know that. Yeah.
And then I wasn't even on Gary's team at this point. I was brand side. Yeah. I was like doing like graphic design for clients. And then just got an email one day and it's like, hey, sorry, we don't have a job for you. And I was like,
oh, after being an intern.
Yeah, after being an intern. And I mean, I had just like, it was at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I literally packed up my bag, like walked out of the office. It was on Park Avenue and 23rd and like stood on the corner. And it was like that movie where like one teardrop is just like, I was like,
and that was your dream job.
Yeah, that was it. And so I was upset for like 4 hours and then was like, okay, how can we?
Did you spin that back to?
So I emailed Gary like directly. I was like, look, I've been an intern. Been trying here, like my goal was to work with you. It's probably not gonna work out, but like, can I just say what's up? He says, okay, come by tomorrow, like we'll have a 5 minute meeting. And he was running super late that day. And so Tyler was like, sorry, we can't do it. And I was like, Friday's my last day. Like he's leaving tomorrow, you know? And so Gary was like, jump in this Uber with me. And so our 5 minute meeting.
And that's
meeting,
what we all saw.
Yeah, our 5 minute meeting turned into an hour long meeting in traffic. And then that was a moment where I was like, I just have to like shoot my shot.
Yeah,
I was like,
you put it all
I can
the
make
table.
The best videos for you. And he's like, all right, explain. And we like talked through things. He was like, cool, I'll give you a month on my team. That's a part I don't tell a lot of people is like, whenever I went to Team Gary, it was on a month term.
Wow.
And then I had to flip that month into a job.
What was like that when you got out of the Uber? Were you just like, let's go, baby?
The funny thing is like, they kicked me out like in Midtown. My mom was like, happened to come visit me that weekend. And she was just like a few blocks away. I'm like sprinting through the streets of New York. And I was like, I think I might make this work, you know? And that's so then she was just like, okay.
Did they keep you at 1250 the first month?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't start like actually making any money there for a while.
Wow.
But it was, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier. Like I like the, like I weirdly, even though like I'm good and I'm comfortable now, like I kind of just want shit to fall apart for a minute go back to zero just to prove I can do it again.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe I'm weird.
No, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I feel like we have a pretty good track record of how to sell things online.
Yeah.
Especially the last 6 months, we've really been able to take off in terms of like, we're upping our spending, more people are ordering at a pretty rapid rate.
Yeah.
But having said all that, I think like part of me is like, this is like, it's almost too easy to scale. Like once you kind of have the math down.
Yeah, once you figure it out, for sure.
So like, it kind of makes me nervous. Like, all right, we got to start. Like, I feel like sometimes that your highest successes are when you're most vulnerable to like for shit to happen.
Because I think it's like where comfort comes into play, right? Like the second you're like coasting and you're like, yeah, we built a successful business. Like the 25-year-old version of you starting the company that wants to put cuts out of business, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like never losing that hunger.
Definitely.
That's really important. So like in its current state, Cuts is moving, it's rolling. Where are your primary focuses now, like in the current state of the business to combat the whole comfort thing and keeping the trajectory going upward?
So the last 3 months I say would be like our biggest transition. We went from just me working in the business, and then we had a finance and a production guy, Carter and Sean, come on, and then Brennan came on and he was our marketing guy. And at that point we worked for about a year where it was just the four of us like grinding, hustling. Everyone had their own vertical.
Yeah.
But now as we have that second layer of staff, I try to, you know, delegate almost everything and really just focus on always looking at like the P&L, making sure the lights come on and things like that, working with our finance people. But I think for us to be like we always say internally, and it sounds almost douchey to say this, but like we want to be a household $1 billion brand one day.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Gary, you know, when Gary is always like saying like, you need a in the clouds goal.
For sure.
And I think that goal almost humbles us a little bit because like, even though we've had success and we've scaled really quickly, we're so far from that, that it keeps us motivated and it puts us our head on the right track. Because if we're just acquiring customers and not focusing on like big brand things, whether it's partnering with athletes for campaigns or doing more vlog stuff like this, where we're really telling our story, that's what ultimately is going to separate us. Cause you know, someone can make a shirt similar.
Yeah.
It's not like there's not a crazy amount of secret sauce. I mean, we do, we have a special process in how we make it, but I think what people really buy into is like them wanting to be a part of is just the story of the brand. So things like this has become a larger and larger part of my focus. Because I think that's how you really catch fire.
Absolutely. It's really funny because as you were just saying that, I was like, holy shit, like
T-shirt to the most like commodity thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like standing out in that market's got to be kind of deadly.
I think it was my dad always like, he's like, I don't know how you thought of that. Like there's a million T-shirt brands out there, yeah. But it's almost like it was a I don't want to say gold mine, but like it was, you know, it was hidden in plain sight, mm-hmm. because there was a million shirts out there. But what makes Cuts great is the simplicity of it, of really having one thing,
yeah.
and accessorizing it. Is what our biggest asset is. Like a lot of, you know, we talked about it today, but like, why haven't you come out with joggers, pants, this and that? Yeah. There's a lot of brands that do that. But if we can just do one thing great, mm-hmm. and be simple and just really show the customers in the most simple way, yeah. that's gonna be our biggest asset to acquire customers. Because I mean, media, there's 20 new brands a day popping up on Instagram.
For sure.
So if we can just be simple, and I think the name and everything plays into it, Cuts shirts.
Yeah.
It's just really easy for the consumer to digest.
Yeah. What's sort of like the design inspiration? I'm curious. And for the like audio only listeners, mm-hmm. it's just whenever you say like minimalist shirt, that's exactly what it is. Like it's mm-hmm. like a basic tee, but it feels super premium and luxury. Mm-hmm. Did you like have that mindset going in? Was there ever like times where you strayed and thought like maybe it needs graphics or something like that? Or is it always just like your personality and the way you wanted it to be was minimalist?
I think personality, like now that I have friends that are founders, and I've become good friends, you can see the founder's influence on any brand like mm-hmm. drastically.
Yeah.
I think my style has always been like, I liked a little bit more elevated items.
Yeah.
And I never liked graphic tees. I always felt like it, you know, like I know the Rock Band tees are in, but that's just never going to be Cuts.
Yeah, for sure.
But in terms of what type of product it is, well, actually funny story, kind of goes back on the grind.
Yeah.
When we first launched on Martin Luther King, we had a factory in right off of Martin Luther King Boulevard in LA, which part of that street is like kind of the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And we were producing there, and they would say, hey, the shirts are done. And I would show up at the factory to pick them up, and the shirts hadn't even been started. The guy was just straight lying to me. So I actually had to sit in the factory, and it was like horrible conditions. I mean, it was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And the only way he was gonna work on the shirts if I was physically there. So like for 3 weeks, I just sat in the factory until they got done.
That's so crazy.
When they finally got done, they shipped to our DC, and the DC has a packing list, and he's like, hey, the packing list is off, like 3,000 or 4,000 shirts. And I'm like, what, how are these off? So I called the guy, I'm like, hey, the packing list is, and he pretty much said we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the way these DCs worked is like they scan every single barcode.
Yeah.
And he was like, there's no way we could have got this wrong. This is computerized. This is just your word writing on a, scribbling on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And at the time, 3,000 shirts was like a shit ton of money for us. You
for
know,
sure.
Like we had to deliver those to our Kickstarter backers. So we didn't have the shirts won. We were out the money of that we already paid, so the guy screwed us over probably like 12 grand, and we couldn't deliver the shirts to the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So me and Carter were like, you know what, we're just gonna have to ship out wrong items to our Kickstarter backers. Like if you got a shirt and you wanted a Henley, we were gonna ship you just whatever shirt we had in your size.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking the brand was done then. I was like, these people are gonna pay, Steven, you're a fraud.
Right.
I ordered a Henley.
Fuck.
And not to mention the Henleys were sideways. I have one hanging up in the office. They were like physically sideways.
Yeah.
So the product just was shit on our Kickstarter.
That's so, I didn't even realize it was a Kickstarter funded, like that was the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, because we needed 100,000 after the Kickstarter to actually run one PO. But we got 42,000. And so that was another struggle. Like Carter, Brennan, and I, and Sean, we all had 20K credit cards that had 0% interest.
Because mm-hmm.
anyone off the street can get those nowadays.
Yeah.
And that's how we funded our first PO, just through 0% APR credit cards for 12 months. Because we could always pay it back. So we were really crafty in the beginning, like any way we could get our hands on money.
Yeah.
But that lesson though of us not having any money, the product being shit, and just keep going.
Yeah.
I remember in the car, I called my finance guy, I was like, dude, this is bad. This is really bad. And I remember me and him just agreeing, like, we're just gonna ship these out. We're gonna tell all the customers, like, in a year from now,
mm-hmm.
we'll ship you out products, but you gotta have faith in us. We're just learning the business.
Yeah.
Like, don't give up on us. And I recorded a video and sent it on the Kickstarter page and said, hey, look, I'm sorry that this happened, but we don't have money to really send you, like, this is the product you're getting. And there was, you know, a good amount of people that were upset.
Yeah.
But it was cool though. A year and a half later, we shipped everyone not only one but two shirts that complained just for free. We said, hey, you know, we told you we're going to do this. Here's an extra one. Yeah. And I think that really showed, like, it was really cool for me to be able to do that.
That's cool. So what was the turning point of you being in the car making that call? Like, I think this thing might be over. First off, how did you just survive it? And then was there like a certain tactic or something you guys implemented to like really get things moving in a positive direction?
I think the turning point was, we left that production facility and we spent the next 5 months not online, not on Facebook from March to August, just focusing on our website and product. Mm-hmm. So we got our website convertible where we paid attention, got advice of like how to make a transaction, like do little things like add a cart in the right spot and things like that. Yeah. And then we just said, hey, if we're gonna be a brand, we gotta focus on product. So I had to go, I had to go to like 5 or 6 different factories and pitch cuts. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was no one was gonna work with us.
Yeah.
Like no one wanted to work with us because our POs were too small. And like in the fashion world, you don't make any money having small POs. So one day I went in there and I found this guy, Chris. And I just told him we were a big brand and we were doing 30,000 units a month, but we needed to test them out. And I kind of like had to like fake it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I told him, I was like, look, I remember telling him like, you know, trust me, we got your back. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to be a waste of your time. Like you got to come. And I was like desperate, you know, kind of like today at the, when we were trying to figure out, I kind of not lied, but I had to like make cuts seem bigger than it was to get through in these production facilities. And we got in a really solid LA production facility that like taught us the business. They said, all right, don't do this. We were washing our shirts with silicone wash and that's like a big no-no. So they put best practices into our product. At the same time, I made trips to over in Taiwan and I worked with the vendor to like, we learned little things of like how to weave the fabric and like you can copy our item, like if you looked at the care label, but it's so much more than that. It's the way, like what water source is feeding into it when it's washed, how tight the machines are. And I really just like, it was like my MBA in fashion. So those 5 months we focused on that. And then we really invested in just like making a great product. And I think through that prior experience of kind of just like taking someone else's opinion, you know, assuming that they could do it. And then making a great product was like, probably the first turning point. And then once we had good units in the store, we just started hustling for our first, because we on Facebook and Instagram ads don't really work until you have your first 500 customers.
Yeah.
So we would post a photo on Instagram and then let's say we would get 200 likes. We would DM every single 200 people that liked and say, hey, check it out. Like, and just create conversations. Mm-hmm. Maybe 1 or 2 out of the 200 would actually buy, but we were able to get a good amount of sales that way.
Okay.
And then friends and family that we thought were actually real customers, we would send it out, and that kind of like helped us a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny hearing the like going in and DMing those 200 people is totally not a scalable thing
at all.
But like that's the extra step that no one wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's super funny. I think you're right. Like the current state of a fashion in this whole world. And like an example I pull up a lot is like we could open up your laptop, come up with a whole new name, and like start a page and have a new brand in an hour.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean like literally immediately. Mm-hmm. And so the barrier of entry is so low, but no one wants to actually do that work.
Totally.
No one wants to pull out their phone and DM 200 people.
And then we also wrote to the 430 people we kind of screwed over. We wrote handwritten letters to each of them. And we just sent the letters. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that was big too. One of the things I think that helped us the most, though, was kind of the origin of it. We made products for me and my friends that we loved, that I was proud to hand to you and say, hey, you're going to love this shirt. And then we just tried to find more people like our friends. And we tried to always stay there. So I think we rapidly got our first 1,000 customers because it was so organic. It was like friends of friends. Oh, yeah, my Steven's friend's friend is starting a clothing business, like, you know, why don't you check it out?
Yeah.
And I think we really did hit on the fit and style and the fabric that really wasn't out there. And then from there, you know, I learned Facebook ads and we spent money very efficiently, which I think was our bread and butter. We're not wasting money that's not actually getting converted for us.
Yeah.
So that was probably what allowed us to scale quickly.
Where's that motivation come from? Like the motivation and the work ethic, I think, because that's like obviously pretty intense. just baked in, like DNA, or is there something, is there a higher purpose that's kind of driving you forward through these firewalls you're having to break through?
I think they all build on each other. Like once you kind of get through one, you're like, you realize like, damn, that was actually kind of epic. And it kind of wants you, like what you were saying earlier, kind of want the shit to fall apart so you can kind of go through that. You kind of build up this like, I can do anything mindset. But I think for me, it started when my dad would always, to do the dishes, he would pay me 50 cents. Mm-hmm. And then I remember I came out to New York one time and I was like, before I was going to a Yankee game, I was like 8 years old at the old Yankee Stadium. And he took me to a Sports Authority or something, and I bought a Derek Jeter jersey. And it was like my first time of like, all right, this is my hard work that I actually bought, that I was able to buy something. So I do give my parents a lot of credit. They just taught me the value of like earning a dollar. They made me get a job when I was 14, and I always was in retail. I worked at Zumiez in high school, to Nordstrom, sold women's shoes. But I think it all builds, like hard work and determination builds on each other. I think it all started from the coins, you know, through the dishwasher to now, and my work ethic has got better, but and just the desire to like create something on your own. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're the same way, where like when you see something that you created from start to finish, after you go through that, you're like, how could I work like?
Yeah.
There's no going back.
Yeah.
I mean, is that how it is? Like, tell me about like what drives you? Like, what was?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Like, on paper, like my whole life, especially growing up in Florida, I was like a slacker, procrastinator. Like, I was called like every name in the book. It was because I just didn't like what I was doing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like science class.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then as soon as I got to New York, like, it got crazy. And I especially, like, I had sort of been put in a position where it was like a make it or break it. So I was just working around the clock. But I don't know. I think I started to, when I got to New York, realize, like, who I was and who I think I can become, and like starting to tap into potential a little bit. And I was like, wow, the only difference between like who I am now and like who I want to be is just like a shitload of work in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And you just have to do that. Like, there's no magic button. You know, it's like the question I always get is like how to be more creative or how to edit faster, edit better. And I'm like, I can't tell you anything other than just doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that. Like when you were talking about your page, you're like, that took a shit ton of work to get it where it is, and you just had to do it. Like you couldn't tell people
100%.
how to do it.
Yeah. And I still think it's like, it's very much in the process. Like it's nowhere near where I want it to be, but it's getting closer. You know, it's way closer now than it was a year ago.
What do you see as like your like standard? Like how do you set yourself standards now that you're kind of on your own? Before you had Vayner, like how
in terms of like the actual work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's really funny is like the thing that I think I'm struggling with is trying to like nail down focus and make every piece of work connect to the piece of work after it and the one that's going to come next, if that makes sense. Like whenever we're talking like the color theme on Instagram, it's like I want everything to be able to like you see the video or the photo or whatever it is.
You know it's Babin.
You know it's Babin without having to know my name's attached to it. Mm-hmm. That's like really what I'm aspiring to.
I like that.
And that's hard for me because I'm interested in so many different things and so many styles of work that it's really easy for me to like go off on a tangent and make something that doesn't look anything like the things I'm doing right now.
Totally.
So I've really been trying to like dial in that aspect of things and like spend more time concepting and understand what my goal is to create than just running out and like shooting like a madman.
Totally.
And then coming in and figuring out, because that's where I think it gets messy.
Yeah.
You know, and I can even tell like in the... It was like about 6 months ago. It was right whenever I left Vayner to do the Adobe thing that I sat down and was like, all right, I'm going to figure out the grid. Like Instagram's got to look on point.
Yeah.
And it's kind of insane how different like brand deals and integrations, like they're coming way faster and for way bigger budgets than what they were just based off me, like making sure all the colors are consistent.
That's wild.
Which is super weird.
See,
but
if you wouldn't,
it's brand, you know, it's like, it's no longer like I'm just a kid who's a content creator. It's like, and I hate
saying
it because I think it sounds douchey, but it's like there's a brand attached to like Babin now.
Yeah.
It has to look and feel a certain way.
Yeah. And and the only way you got there is just from the detailed approach of that work ethic. Yeah, that's
and like doing everything wrong a million times. You know?
Totally.
And I think like in a weird way, as much as like it sucks to go through the phase where like the Henleys are sideways, it's probably really good you went through that, because at least now you know how to address that problem.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was everything. And it also helps us to address the next set of problems.
Yeah.
Like now we're dealing with, like how to order a lot of like mass orders. Like our orders are, you know, there'll be a million shirts in the world like very shortly. So there's a lot of
fuck. How's that feel?
That's wild. It's I think last Thanksgiving I started to see them in the wild more.
Yeah.
And now I can like at least on the West Coast like you see them quite a bit. It was funny. My dad was in LA for his birthday, and he was like, I want to see a Cuts in the Wild. Yeah. in the Wild. And we're at Creation in Santa Monica, and we're just sitting there like here, and we see two guys walk up, and both the guys are wearing Cuts, and my dad's like, hey, like nice shirt. And I'm like, come on. So but it's the coolest feeling in the world, like when you see them, when you see actually consumers wearing them, or you know, you get a text from someone, hey, I'm on the subway, this guy's wearing Cuts.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I want to like, and that's why when that stuff happens, it's even more important that we focus on like who we are as a brand. You know, Cuts, we are our own customers. We're all 20 chances 23 to 30, you know, we're right in that demo. We're young guys, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. trying to like make it, and I think that can inspire people, and it just becomes so much more relatable for us.
Yeah.
So, and that's like I always say, someone can copy our stuff, copy us to the T, but you can't copy who we are.
Right.
So if we continue to invest in that, as long as people believe in us and we have our heads on straight, like we can't lose.
Yeah, it's funny you said your dad, and this is kind of like a step backwards. What was the reaction to you being like leaving this job, going to start a clothing brand?
I think he was always supportive of it, but like he didn't get it.
For
like,
sure.
You know, my parents, like, they're like, you're gonna sell shirts online? Like, you know, even people in e-com, like my buddies that had like a lot of success, they're like, one size fits all is kind of what you have to do in e-com, because like, you know, you're gonna have to deal with returns too much. Yeah. And like big brands, like my Blake was like, mm-hmm. dude, it's not gonna really work.
Yeah.
And I had to like put my head on straight and be like, no, this is gonna work. I think my dad, you know, just seeing like our Shopify accounts go from, you know, a couple thousand or a couple hundred bucks a day to thousands and, you know, more, was for him, he was like, wow, this is the real. Now he talks about it and tells people. It's such a good relationship from how I got to kind of convince him in the process.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the things I think was super special about it. And I think for kids listening that maybe their parents don't agree with them, I think it's easy to have like a negative thought about how could my mom and dad not believe in me?
Yeah.
But I think what I've learned is it's not that they don't believe in you, it's that they just don't get it. Mm-hmm. And so instead of having like a negative viewpoint towards them, it's almost like you almost have to like not feel sorry, but you have to kind of understand. Mm-hmm. Like they may not understand. You're there to show them in the nice way. Because I think you can get frustrated and be like mad at your parents when that's not the right attitude. The right attitude is to just say, hey, mom, I kindly disagree, but this is the way we're going to do it, and you just got to trust me.
Yeah.
And I think you'll end up working easier that way.
Yeah.
What about you? What was your parents like?
So that's the funny thing is like, you really just have to, I think, make yourself happy. And like, you just have to do the thing you want to do when you want to do it, because otherwise that's just going to turn into like resentment and things like that. I think, and I have an amazing relationship with both of my parents now, but like throughout high school and like the little bit of college I tried, you know, we like butted heads a ton. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's that they didn't believe in me and didn't think I could do things the way I wanted to. I was just, I had a very new approach. I was like, I'm just going to go do it. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what do you mean? You know? And so I remember like leaving college and then leaving college to like take an internship on the other side of the world where I didn't know anyone, like had no leads really outside of this one opportunity. They were just like, all right, well, best of luck, you know?
And now they're probably like,
blown away. Like they're stoked. And it's super funny. My mom will always like, especially now as Gary's like really like hitting mainstream, like my mom will like hear someone bring up Gary, and it's like, I think just sort of fitting in a way. I was able to like be a part of that like founding team.
Yeah, you really were. Like, that's how, you know, we found each other, and that's crazy.
I think, but you're right. Like, just don't like burn bridges. Mm-hmm. Just understand that like sometimes it's gonna take longer for people to get it.
Totally.
I think like your way of looking at it's like really good. Mm-hmm. That whenever you're doing something new, it's not that they don't believe in you. It's just that that's an unfamiliar world to someone who hasn't like seen it happen yet.
And I feel like if you get mad at anyone, mm-hmm. it's ultimately like they're not going to be upset about you getting mad. It's like you're just hurting yourself. So like in any situation, like even, you know, when those guys screwed us over, I remember being like, you know what, I just have to put this to bed. Because if I'm spending too much time upset, we lost a ton of money, like, we're not going to be able to move forward. And
Once things happen, like, just...
Yeah, you got to move on.
You can't spend, like, an ounce of energy on that anymore.
Totally.
Where's the future of cuts going?
I think, you know, I always say, and I'll say it again, we're going to be a household billion-dollar brand one day. There's lots of examples, like Ty Henney and Outdoor Voices. You know, they're there over a 7-8 year period. You know, there's lots of brands that have been able to do that. So that's, you know, again, that's in the clouds. We're so far from that, but I believe we can do that one day. You know, I think we're finally ready to go into our a secondary product. Mm-hmm. I think as our customer develops, they're asking for it because maybe you have 5 or 6 shirts and it's time to get you something else. I think all of the clothing we're going to make is going to be around like the new work. So we want to be the leaders in the space of, I call it like one of our avatars. We have avatars for all of our types of customers that are written up in the office. And one of the avatars I think can speak to this podcast is like the coffee shop baller. Yeah. There's so many of those that work in advertising agencies, or they freelance, or they're all kind of always on the go.
Yeah.
We want to provide premium clothing for those people so they can look good in the office and then look good on a date afterwards. And that the clothes moves with you.
Yeah.
And so that's our focus as we come into our secondary products.
Yeah. And then if you're talking to the 25-year-old version of yourself that's trying to get their new brand off the ground, what do you say to that person to move forward?
I think two things. One, don't debate for too long. If you have a debate and you've been thinking about it, just jump, and then you'll make mistakes, but you'll learn so much.
Yeah.
And two, you gotta have patience. And you know, I know that's kind of cliche nowadays. Everyone's saying patience, but it's so true.
Yeah.
You gotta, like, for us, we didn't really like. We there was 3 years where no one was making money in the business. We were putting every penny of profit back in to get our larger POs.
Yeah.
And it was 3 years of we all, like, Sean was working at Boeing full time and taking calls on his car and the computer.
Yeah.
Brennan was at an advertising agency. Carter was an accountant, and like the core team, you know, was all having second jobs. Like, that's what it takes.
Yeah.
And enjoy that process. And now, like, us having our own office and having like a conference room and just the little things, like, we're all in a place. I tell my dad, like, the dream I had 4 or 5 years ago is right now. And I think it gives you appreciation for not wanting more and more and more, it, going through that, because you can, you know, you can realize how far you've come.
It's funny, like, and I want to hang on to like the patience thing for a second, because you're right, it's cliche in the fact that like lots of people are talking about it. But I think that the important thing and the thing that a lot of people get wrong is patience doesn't mean chill out.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think too many people are like, oh, patience, so I just have to wait until the phone rings and it's Kanye and he's like, you got a record deal. No, you have to still like work your face off. Mm-hmm. Just be okay with the fact that probably nothing's going to happen with all that work for a while.
Yeah. I mean, and I think one more thing I want to mention too is like, you have to do things that you inherently like would either love or that you would inherently want to do. Mm-hmm. One Chance, you met him, he's on the clipboard today. He, I think, followed the Gary Vee model like to a T. I recorded 10 vlogs in the early days.
Yeah.
And he watched the vlogs and he just shot me an email. He goes, I'm a 20-year-old kid, I have no experience, but there's something about cuts that I just really love.
Yeah.
He was living in some tiny town in Florida. I was in Seattle, like outside of Seattle. He was like, I just want, you know, I want to help you. So he started doing graphic design for me. Mm-hmm. And he really like, I think like, I look at my education at San Diego State versus what he got in the last 2 years of being kind of seeing the growth, mm-hmm. how paid acquisition works.
Yeah.
And now he is like killing it. He knows influencer marketing, like probably better than like people twice his age.
Yeah.
And it's all from him just being vulnerable and saying, hey, I'm just here. I'm just down to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. I don't want pay. I'm just down to help. And then it was cool for me because I said, hey, I can't pay you one. I have no guarantee that you'll ever get a full-time job. But if there is an opportunity, I'll get you one. And then about 6 months ago, I offered him a full-time job and moved out here. And I think that was probably the coolest thing that's happened in Cuts by far.
Yeah.
Is to be able to follow through on a promise and how well, and see his like leadership and his ability to like understand the marketplace.
Yeah.
It's taught me so much, like even how we go about hiring in the future. Mm-hmm. Like if you can get a young kid who's just hungry and knows he doesn't know anything, and then he just is soaking in everything that is in his surroundings, within 6 months he's gonna be like cultured Cuts perfect, and he's gonna fit the culture and he's gonna be able to grow with the business.
Yeah.
Better than someone that maybe has like 4 or 5 years experience, but they got a thumb up their ass because they want to do it the way that they've done it.
Yeah.
So there's I'm sure there's, you know, experience does help in some ways, but I think that vulnerability of knowing you don't know anything is so important when you're that 25-year-old self.
For sure. I think there's like two avenues to go down, right? It's like the one, just putting yourself in rooms with people that matter and that are 100%. Better than you, like Chance did. And then also, if it's the flip side, if you do come with 5 years of experience, that's sick. Just be willing to like put your ego aside for a second and like willing to learn and adapt.
Yeah. When I was in school, I worked for this gym. And I got an interview. It was a really cool experience. I got an interview with like 40-year-old men applying to be like the director position. Mm-hmm. They wanted one student member. And one of the employees that stuck out was, they go, what are you gonna do when you first came in? And all the employees are, this and that, this is wrong. He goes, I'm not gonna do anything. I'm just gonna sit here and listen and see what you guys do great, because you're already doing a bunch of things great.
Yeah.
So on that line, that stuck out to me. I was like, wow, that's a leader. That's someone that knows his place and his time will come, but he was vulnerable to the situation and willing to listen.
Anything else we wanna leave the people with?
Wow, I felt like we were just firing off there for a little bit.
I know.
It was
like,
fun.
I really crushed it. That's like, dude, podcast time is like weird. Like all of a sudden you just blink and it's like, all right, that was 45 minutes.
I know, that was epic. I know we've kind of touched on this a couple of times, but be okay with being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Work your ass off. There's no other way around saying that. And have fun doing it. Like I wake up every day.
Yeah.
Like, my 25-year-old self, getting to meet people like Tyler and a lot of the people like founders from other businesses, my life's changed 100% in the last 4 years just from following my gut and wanting to do something on my own. When you take this leap of faith to do something that you want to do and you learn from those, you're going to be blown away of what can happen. So let Cuts be an example of you can have nothing and go pretty far. Let's go, baby.
Fire.